reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Vice President Kamala Harris has held a meeting with a member of Israel's wartime cabinet who came to Washington in defiance of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. That meeting Monday with Benny Gantz, arrival of Netanyahu, played out as the Biden administration intensifies its efforts to push more humanitarian aid into battered Gaza. White House says that Harris and Gantz also discussed the urgency of completing a hostage deal to free more than 100 people believed to still be in captivity in Gaza following the Hamas October 7th attack on Israel. The UN envoy focusing on sexual violence and conflict said in a new report Monday that there are reasonable grounds to believe that Hamas committed rape, sexualized torture, and other cruel and inhumane treatment of women during its surprise attack in southern Israel on October 7th. There are also reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may be ongoing. That's according to Pramila Patton, who visited Israel and the West Bank from January 29th to February 14th. The nine-member technical team, based on first-hand accounts of released hostages, she said the team found clear and convincing information that some women and children during their captivity were subjected to the same conflict-related sexual violence, including rape and sexualized torture. The report comes nearly 5 months after the October 7th event. A 53-year-old union of immigration judges has been ordered to get supervisor approval to speak publicly to anyone outside the Justice Department, potentially quieting a frequent critic of heavily backlog immigration courts in an election year. The National Association of Immigration Judges has spoken regularly at public forums. This is VOA News. Heavily armed gangs tried to seize control of Haiti's main international airport on Monday, exchanging gunfire with police and soldiers in the latest attack on key government sites in an explosion of violence that includes a mass escape from the country's two biggest prisons. The international airport was closed when the attack occurred, with no planes operating and no passengers on site. Associated Press journalists saw an armored truck on the tarmac shooting at gangs to try and prevent them from entering airport grounds. Scores of employees and other workers fled from whizzing bullets. China's official growth target for this year is around 5%. That's according to the premier on Tuesday in the annual report on the government's plans and performance that prioritize both security and the economy, saying that the government would continue with a proactive fiscal policy and prudent monetary policy, suggesting no major change in the leadership's approach to pursuing what it calls high-quality development. The ruling Communist Party has been emphasizing the need to raise consumer spending to help drive the economy, but the consumer-led recovery it was counting on after anti-pandemic controls ended in late 2022 faltered midway through last year. French lawmakers on Monday overwhelmingly approved the bill to enshrine abortion rights in France's constitution, making it the only country to explicitly guarantee a woman's right to voluntarily terminate a pregnancy. The historic move was proposed by President Emmanuel Macron as a way to prevent the kind of rollback of abortion rights seen in the United States in recent years. In the vote during a special joint session of France's parliament, it drew a long-standing ovation among lawmakers. The measure was approved in a 780-72 vote in the Palace of Versailles. Abortion enjoys wide support in France across most of the political spectrum and has been legal since 1975. Texas's plans to arrest migrants who enter the United States illegally and order them to leave the country is headed to the Supreme Court in a legal showdown over the federal government's authority over immigration. The Justice Samuel Alito on Monday issued an order that puts the new Texas law on hold for at least next week while the high court considers what opponents have called the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since the Arizona law more than a decade ago. The law had been set to take effect Saturday under decision from an appeals court. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An online protest movement in Uganda is bringing to light allegations of government corruption.
Positing the instruments in the Secretary General is the beginning of our work, and we are aware that you had key priorities. One of them was fighting Al-Shabaab, which we realize is part of a security issue, and you are working on it to ensure that Somalia becomes secure.
Somalia officially becomes a full member of the East African Community after submitting its ratification documents for official admission.
When it comes to showcasing my business online, internet access has done most of it, 80% of it. Without the internet, we won't be able to do any of those things.
And the World Bank says digital entrepreneurship and internet access is paving the way for economic empowerment and poverty reduction across Nigeria. Those stories are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia has officially become a full member of the East African Community after the country deposited its so-called ratification instrument of the Treaty of Accession on Monday. The country now becomes the eighth member of the community. Moses Habyarimana reports.
Somalia is now the eighth country to join the East African Community after the Democratic Republic of Congo joined the bloc in April 2022. Despite Somalia having applied to join the community back in 2012, security in the country has been a major challenge and a factor that has hindered its admittance into the community. Dr. Peter Matoki is the Secretary General of the East African Community.
And therefore, depositing the instruments with the Secretary General is the beginning of our work. And we are aware that you had key priorities. One of them was fighting Al-Shabaab, which we realize is part of a security issue. And you are working on it to ensure that Somalia becomes secure. And we want to wish you well.
With its official entry into the bloc, Somalia is now committed to harmonizing and ratifying the East African Community law and the treaty, which includes adherence to the universally acceptable principles of good governance, democracy, the rule of law, observance of human rights and social justice. Dr. Abdusalam Omer is a presidential special envoy of Somalia to the East African Community.
This is a very big day for Somalia. I think equally it's a big day for the East Africa community. We are part of a big family that brings us for economic prosperity, security. We have waited this moment for a long time, and it has come under the leadership of Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, and I was proud to be part of it. We will exchange information on security.
A verification mission was launched by EAC on January 25th last year to assess the readiness of Somalia to join the regional body. The verification team's report was later adopted by the EAC Heads of State Summit in Bujumbura on June 6, 2023. Dr. Fred Mukasambide is a regional specialist and the vice president of Democratic Party, an opposition party in Uganda.
The deposit of documents by Somalia definitely to the East African community is both boon and bane. Somalia is itself a conflict and insecurity laden with its attendant territorial enigma, particularly over Somaliland. So we would say the challenge is notwithstanding, we must welcome Somalia to the extent that then the East African community integration process is now mature enough to make sure we can deal with the problems as they arise.
Despite the security challenges in Somalia, analysts say that the transborder trade will increase significantly in the region as the community becomes a market of more than 300 million people and a gross domestic product of over $300 billion. Moses Avyarimana for VOA Africa.
A government expert says Somalia is set to experience an economic boost after officially becoming a full member of the South African community. Javas Bigambo also says the regional bloc could be a platform where regional leaders can help resolve the ongoing maritime dispute between Somalia and its neighbor, Kenya. His remarks come after Somalia became an official member of the East African community. For more analysis and prospects of Somalia's membership, VOA's Peter Klote reached Javas Bigambo.
It is welcome relief with regard to the expansion of the community by an additional member state. However, there are other critical issues that come to mind. Kenya has had a border dispute issue at the International Court of Justice with Somalia. It means then that because these two countries now belong to the same community, the fraternal relations that they share means then that they must be agreeable to find alternative means of adjudicating the maritime dispute other than having it adjudicated by the International Court of Justice. And so it means then that Somalia will have to withdraw its case from ICJ in good conscience as a matter of appreciating the brotherly ties that Somalia now shares with Kenya, given that they are within the East African community.
So you think the East Africa community as a regional bloc will be a perfect, so to speak, platform that will have the regional leaders to try to resolve possible tensions or the dispute, maritime dispute between Kenya and Somalia?
Given that Somalia has now been admitted, it therefore means that there must be alternative mechanisms of resolving the disputes or whatever challenges that are there, because once they are within the same community, it will be in bad taste if the manner of approaches and the challenges that have been there between Kenya and Somalia will continue on that same trajectory. So I think whether it is within the community or bilaterally just between Kenya and Somalia, there must be a better way, a smoother way, a more fraternal way of resolving any kind of disputes or conflicts, even those that are presently existing.
Concerns have been raised about security challenges that Somalia routinely face. Do you think by becoming a full member of the EAC, regional leaders could help with some of these security challenges and help resolve it?
The issue is that the security challenges facing Somalia may not dissipate merely by it being admitted to the East African community, but appreciating the manner in which, for example, the entire community has been concerned about the security situation in member states. For instance, how the East African community considered and still helps to intervene with the security situation in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, and even how the community was concerned about the political situation, for example, in Burundi, and how the East African community has been encouraging peaceful resolution diplomatically of the relations between DRC and Rwanda, and even how Rwanda itself has been very cordial in the manner in which it's been handling its own challenges with the DRC. It therefore means that the East African community will be hard-pressed, and because of the spirit of the community, to come together and consider how the challenges, the security challenges facing Somalia, can be intervened with the help of the community's leadership. So yes, the East African community will consider how to intervene and or helping Somalia resolve its security challenges, because the challenges now facing a member state of the community becomes a shared concern of the entire community.
I know the move of Somalia becoming a full member of the EAC could also significantly boost economic growth in that country, but what do you think the prospects are for both the community and Somalia in particular?
The primary boost from the economic lenses is that Somalia is bound to enjoy fully the relief with respect to tariffs that are enjoyed within the East African community member states. And that is a major plus, so that the inhibition that comes with the tariffs for exportation and importation of goods and services becomes an issue that now does not face the initial barriers. And additionally, I think the issue of Somalia spreading with the member states of the East African community will be therefore beneficial to Somalia, as well as an increased market for Somalia's goods and services, just as much as the East African member states trading with Somalia.
That was Javas Bigambo, a governance expert, speaking with my colleague Peter Clote. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 5th. In Uganda, an online protest movement is bringing to light allegations of deeply rooted corruption within the government. Issues such as the misappropriation of public funds, inadequately resourced hospitals, and neglected infrastructure are being highlighted through an online campaign on the social media platform X, previously known as Twitter. The hashtag Uganda Parliament Exhibition has gained traction by leaking official documents and presenting information through scheduled posts. This in a country where street protests are practically outlawed and where corruption is widely and often deadly. To find out more about the impact of the campaign, I reached Sisi Kagaba, a lawyer and a former executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition Uganda.
The impact has been very, very positive, and obviously it's able to bring out the anger that people experience when it comes to those that are in positions of leadership and how they tend to eliminate themselves and the various allowances. But the other beauty of this campaign as well, the online campaign, is that it has brought out a lot of information that ordinarily we wouldn't get to see. So one way or the other, you realize that the members of the public are able to trust particular individuals and whistleblow and give them particular information. And again, I think it also further shows that even those that are within the system are able to see, but they don't have an avenue to vent out their anger. So they've used the online campaign to bring out as much information as possible to show the inequalities and the excesses of those that are in positions of power.
This is not the first campaign about funds. There was one about potholes around the city and other issues.
Yeah.
What do you attribute success? Because other people have protested and the government didn't allow them. So is online the safest way to do it now?
I think for me, two ways. We talk of success when you see people coming out and attacking those that are leading the campaign. When you see the PROs of probably like Parliament coming out and defending, that actually shows that the allegations, well, are credible, not credible, but the fact that they're able to respond to them, that actually shows or demonstrates a degree of success. Because otherwise, if a campaign is not successful, you just ignore it. But there's been a lot of hitting back at quite a number of activists that have come out online and tried to give information. So for me, we look at that as a success. And also, as long as information is out there, again, it is a success. People are able to see how exactly their leaders behave the moment our leaders go into public offices. How do they abuse or, use their power? So I think for me, the success on my part is the fact that the public now has information and they're equipped with any kind of information to help them to know the kind of leaders that they have.
Do you find it interesting that in this case, in this particular campaign, some of the leaders can't deny what they're being accused of?
It is interesting they can't deny because the facts speak for themselves. But also, what we are seeing is not new. It is a precedent that was already set by previous speakers, by previous parliaments. When we talk of the amount of money that we see people giving themselves, trust me, this is not new. What has changed are the amounts of money that these people are giving each other. And I remember, I think when I used to be in civil society, one of the things we kept on advocating for was the same things that we are seeing now. So when some of them cannot deny, it isn't surprising that some of them cannot deny, because if a precedent has been set. And again, they also know that after some time, this campaign is going to go down and we shall probably jump on something else.
Do you think it will have an impact? Will it lead to some change?
No, I don't think it's going to change, because like I said, there isn't anything new under the sun that we have not seen. Such campaigns have come out. And, we have a breed of leaders that do not really care. They will not resign, because that is not, they will not resign, they will not step down. No action will be taken against them, because, again, that is a precedent that we have seen or experienced, or even the predecessors of those that we are castigating right now. Similar things happen, but, nothing happened. So we don't expect anything different. And, of course, in Uganda, we don't have that culture of stepping down. I mean, you've seen what has happened. There are quite a number of grand corruption cases that we have seen. Have we seen anyone step down? No. Have we seen the president taking action? No. We've seen the president on a number of occasions coming out and promising to take action, but no action has ever been taken. So even with this, despite the fact that we see a lot of public anger and outcry coming out, personally, I don't really see anyone stepping aside or anyone resigning.
That was Sisi Kagaba, a lawyer and the former executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition Uganda. She spoke with me earlier from Kampala. A black South African woman pilot who used to fly Nelson Mandela around says her thick skin keeps her from being fazed by discrimination. And this International Women's Day, she's urging young girls who are thinking about having careers in aviation to also ignore those who say their gender and race make them incapable of doing the job. Reporter Vicky Stark in Cape Town, South Africa, spoke with Captain Annabelle Vundula via Zoom.
Vundula recalls the day she decided to become a pilot. She was with her mother at the airport and was just 7 years old.
Then I saw the pilots and they had their hats and they were looking so good. And I said, well, what do those guys do? And she said, no, they fly the airplane. I thought, geez, I want to fly the airplane. And she said to me, that's not for women. You know, women don't do that. I said, well, actually, I'm going to do it.
And that's exactly what she did. When Captain Vundla finished secondary school, she joined the South African Air Force.
I was the first black woman to graduate in the Air Force in the year 2000. I was also the first black female instructor in the Air Force. And I left the Air Force in 2010. And then I joined South African Airways. And now I'm the first black female captain of an airline in this country.
And why did she leave the Air Force?
I purely just moved to a commercial airline because, you know, when you're flying heads of state, you are on standby 24/7. And I had gotten married and we were planning on having children. I've got two kids and I cannot live on a standby.
She remains a reservist in the military, working as a part-time pilot in the presidential squadron. Vundla recalls flying the late South African president and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Nelson Mandela.
I flew him for 5 years. It was more of a lectured relationship as to his life and what I can do to be a better person in society.
Captain Vundla says the biggest obstacle preventing women from going into the male-dominated aviation industry is the high cost of pilot training if they don't go the military route.
The military, definitely there is a physical aspect to it. You've got to be able to run. You have to walk kilometers with your backpack, shooting. So you're a soldier first and then you're a pilot in the military. So the physical aspect of it, I think, puts a lot of people off.
She says the other obstacle is exposure.
And the exposure I talk about is from the African sense of a lot of girls, some girls don't even go to school. The male child would.
Captain Vundla advises those girls and young women brave enough to pursue their dream of becoming pilots to do well at math, science, and geography at school and to never give up. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
The World Bank says digital entrepreneurship is paving the way for economic empowerment across Nigeria and reducing poverty through internet access. In a January report, the bank says internet access reduced extreme poverty by 7% in the West African country. But it noted the digital gender gap where women are less likely than men to have internet access. Gibson Emaka reports from Abuja in this report, narrated by Mary Alice Salinas.
Anna Dufo runs her multiple e-commerce businesses in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Her business is known as drop shipping, a business model where products are sold online without the need for a so-called brick-and-mortar facility where those products are stored and processed. It involves the management of e-commerce inventory and affiliate marketing, where she promotes online products for other businesses. Ajufo started her online business in 2022 with less than $50.
Okay, let's say I started with 50,000 naira. So today, I can tell you the percentage has increased to over 150% of income coming in from the business.
Ajufo's success story has its roots in access to the internet, a good phone, social media, and spending around $6 a month on a data subscription.
When it comes to showcasing my business online, internet access has done most of it, 80% of it. Without the internet, we won't be able to do any of those things.
And for many, like Ajufo, the internet means more income and opportunity. A January 2024 World Bank report discloses that sub-Saharan Africa recorded a 115% increase in internet users between 2016 and 2021. This, the bank said, also reduced extreme poverty by 7% in Nigeria, fostering economic growth and innovation. Gebenga Adebayo is with the Association of Licensed Telecommunications Operators in Nigeria.
Opportunities are abound in terms of the benefit for e-commerce, benefit for e-health, benefit for e-government, and as well as in terms of basic commercial transactions.
Despite the gains, the World Bank says women in sub-Saharan Africa have less access to the internet compared to men. The report also says women are 37% less likely to use mobile internet services than men, and that women in rural communities are affected most by the lack of digital access. Hawa Mustafa, an economist, talks about the impact on women.
Once they cannot have one's means of, you know, accessing the internet or data becomes much out of their reach, they become deprived. In fact, they become deprived educationally, they become deprived in terms of skills, and once all of these things, they become deprived in terms of having access to basic information about markets, about services, about even how to improve them. And once that is done, because then they become left behind.
Rural women in sub-Saharan Africa earn about 77% less than men, while urban women earn 46% less, according to data from the U.S. National Library of Medicine. Adebayo says poverty is a key reason for the disparity.
Quite a number of women, particularly in rural Nigeria, cannot afford the cost of basic smartphone or feature phone.
The Nigerian Communications Commission says it has launched projects to close the country's gender digital gap. Among them are the Digital Skills for Women and Girls Initiative, Nigerian Girls Can Code, and Women in ICT. Experts say there is a need to double these efforts. They suggest the government ramps up grassroots access to internet-enabled devices at affordable rates to get more women on board. For Gibson Amika in Abuja, Nigeria, Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News.
And that's it for this Tuesday, March 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you a very nice day.
Bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful. Because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say, enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.